This is ESPN. Yes. From Scout City, here's Jeremy Green.
Hello, and welcome to an extra special early edition of ESPN Football Today. I am your producer, Jay Soderberg, helping to fill in with Matt Williamson from Scouts Inc. Jeremy Green, still on sick leave. Matt Williamson, how are you?
I'm great, buddy. Good to be here again.
It is, and I'm going to let you do all the heavy lifting today. What do you think about that?
I'm a little concerned. I got to be honest with you. I'm a little concerned. I've never been that guy. I don't know how to ask questions. Just ask me about football. That's what I'm good at, man.
Well, that's pretty much how you have to approach it. You now have to ask everyone else about football.
Yeah, but then I have to be quiet and listen to what they say, and I just want to chime in and tell them what I think.
Oh, well, feel free to do that, too. Email, send them to footballtoday@espnradio.com. I don't know if we'll have enough time today to get any emails in, but we do want your emails about free agency, what your team has done, what your team hasn't done, what free agents are out there, what you think your team needs to do. Send them in, footballtoday@espnradio.com, and hopefully we'll get your emails in the coming weeks. For now, I'm going to put Matt Williamson in the three-point stance.
This is the three-point stance.
Hey, now I want to bring in James Walker from ESPN.com and our AFC North blogger. James and I talk quite a bit, but usually not under these circumstances. Usually I'm getting calls from him asking questions about players, schemes, teams, fits, rosters, and kind of excited to pick his brain, see what he has to say about things. How's things going, buddy?
Everything's great, man. A favor for a favor sometimes. We're going to do it old school today.
Absolutely, buddy. I hear you were a little busy yesterday. What were you up to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just every hour on the hour, pretty much, something seemed to happen in the AFC North, whether it was, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers signing four guys in one day, which, you know, I don't know if they've signed four guys in an entire offseason over the last few years. You had the police press conference with Ben Roethlisberger. You had, you know, Anquan Boldin had an introductory press conference. You know, T.O. coming to Cincinnati for a visit today. I mean, there was just a lot of different things happening throughout the division. So it was pretty crazy. So, you know, I think this might have been as busy as you can have an off-season for free agency in one day. So it was definitely exciting.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Let's hit all of them. You know, let's start my hometown team here. And obviously, I think the biggest story is the Ben Roethlisberger situation. And I'm sure you're more on top of the details than I am. And if maybe you could fill the listeners in of the latest goings on and what your feelings on things are and all those wonderful things. But the town's not real happy. I can give you that pulse of the Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the most poignant things that you know, I've heard as far as, you know, comments from people in Pittsburgh is that now Roethlisberger has one more controversy than he has Super Bowl rings. You know, he has the motorcycle crash and then the two sexual assault allegations, you know, over the last year or so. And, you know, he has two Super Bowl rings. So at some point, you know, the Steelers are going to have to weigh, you know, when is this behavior, you know, going to stop it? At least, you know, obviously nothing's been filed. Charges haven't been filed at this point, but, you know, it's definitely controversial and, you know, something the Steelers are going to have to deal with, an issue in the offseason. So that's definitely interesting. As far as the latest, yesterday's press conference, they're going to do some interviews in the next couple of days. They're still in the information gathering phase. And, you know, at this point, no charges have been filed. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I think it's definitely going to be a dark cloud looming over Pittsburgh, and you know, like I mentioned earlier, it's going to be the third off season. You know, whether it was the motorcycle crash or something else that, you know, Roethlisberger has sort of brought that negative attention over the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is a very classy organization. So this isn't something that this is definitely the type of attention that the Steelers don't want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think everybody around here knows, and really throughout the league, that it really is a class organization, and I think they understand too that every, you know, football players aren't choir boys, but I don't know. I'm real curious to see if something does hit the fan, you know, what do they do? I mean, do they suspend them? Do they part ways with them? Do you think it could ever get to that point?
Yeah, and Commissioner Goodell sort of has his own, you know, gavel in a way in terms of suspensions. And, you know, he can sort of determine. I remember the Chris Henry situation a couple years ago. He actually had a hung jury for a situation that he had. And you know, so nothing happened, and I think charges were dropped after that point to where nothing happened in the court of law for his latest incident. But because of the accumulation, Roger Goodell suspended him for, I believe it was four games, you know, going into that. I believe that was the 2008 season. So, you know, so something could happen, you know, NFL-wise. in terms of the league office, whether or not, you know, some, you know, the developments come out. But it's still a fluid situation at this point. I think that might be looking a little too far ahead, but it's definitely not a good look, you know, for Ben Roethlisberger or Pittsburgh Steelers as a whole.
Sure. And I think it is important that people not jump to too many conclusions, too. There isn't all that much information out there. But, you know, my next question, I guess, is what do you make of all the activity in Pittsburgh? I mean, from a roster standpoint, a free agency standpoint, I mean, they hit it hard yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, four signings. I mean, they're pretty much leading the division in free agent signings after, you know, just one day of activity. They were pretty quiet for the first 3 days, which, you know, pretty much fits their character. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you have they re-signed Ryan Clark. They got Will Allen, and they got Antoine Randle and Arnaz Battle. And, you know, these moves to me, besides the Ryan Clark signing, who's a starter, obviously, but these moves to me tell me that, you know, they want to get depth and they want to get help on special teams. I mean, you know how bad their special teams was for the past, you know, couple years or so. And now they have, you know, a guy in Arnaz Battle who might can be that fourth or fifth wide receiver, but he's also pretty good on special teams. And also with Will Allen, he can be that third safety, you know, in case Polamalu gets hurt, in case Ryan Clark gets hurt, he can probably play both of those safety at the same time. He can contribute on the on special teams. So I think this is one of those moves, you know, that they have for depth. Antoine Randle L, everyone knows his dad with the Steelers. Bruce Arians doesn't run a lot of trick plays, but bringing Randle L back and having Dennis Dixon already on the roster, they at least have some options if they want to go in that direction.
Yeah, you know, that's great points. And the thing that really stuck out to me is what you said was, you know, that they replaced their special teams coach this offseason, and every one of these moves has a special teams influence. I mean, Ryan Clark is a starter, like you said, but I don't know that it would shock anybody if they still drafted a safety really high and potentially replaced him, but I do think his starting role is safe. Will Allen's a core special teamer that Tomlin knew from Tampa, and Battle's a core special teamer, too, that the new special teams coach had a relationship in San Francisco. So, as usual, you know, Randle L's an old Steeler. They're bringing back guys they know well, and I think it's a pretty good formula, and it sets them up pretty well for the draft where their needs aren't nearly as pressing.
Yeah, and also just to add, I think they learned in terms of that special teams that they need to win that phase of the game. You know, they've gotten away. They've won a Super Bowl, and you know, last year I think they've kind of learned that they can't always win games, you know, with stout defense. The way the league is going right now, you're going to face a ton of great quarterbacks. It seems like half the teams have quarterbacks that they can hurt you. And, you know, you're going to have to win that third phase of the game. You can't keep relying on, you know, the offense and the defense to just be dominant, you know, week in and week out. And I think special teams was one of those reasons why, you know, they did fall off to the degree. You know, that kind of finally caught up with them where they were able to get away with that for a while, and they just weren't able to get away with that last season. So I think that's why you see them addressing those needs early in free agency.
Okay. Let's move on to the Cincy here a little bit. And I'm real curious what your take is on this receiver situation. It certainly seems, you know, I do a list of team needs, and I definitely receiver is their number one need. I think tight end's quickly behind it, but obviously their passing game needs to improve. I think they're addressing it. I mean, I think they recognize it at least. What's your take? Do you have a hunch one way or another what direction they might go in adding the established receiver?
Yeah, T.O. and Antonio Bryan are the two guys that I think they're most likely to sign, one or the other, and they're going to meet with both guys this week. I know Adam Schefter reported about Brandon Marshall, but I think that's a very small percentage. Mike Brown doesn't give up first-round picks. He doesn't sign guys to $30, $35, $40 million contracts. So that combination just pretty much rules the Bengals out there, even though they did, you know, have some internal discussions. But between Antonio Bryan and Terrell Owens, I mean, there's an eight-year age difference, you know, so I guess it's debatable on which guy is better. But I really think the Terrell Owens signing could work for Cincinnati. And when I say it could work for them, I mean in terms of being a short-term option, a cheap option. You could probably get Owens for 1 or 2 years. He's good friends with Chad Ochocinco, so I don't think the chemistry thing is going to be that big an issue unless the team is losing. But I really think the Bengals, if they make the right moves coming off the AFC North title, I really think they're going to be in position to compete again next year. So, you know, in a strange way, I know a lot of people from the outside is going to say, wow, T.O. and Chad Ochocinco, just there's no way that's going to work. Carson Palmer's going to have a huge headache. But I really think in a strange way that pairing could work. And you know, if you gave me the choice between the two, in particular for the Bengals, considering the business side as well, I think T.O. would be a better fit. I've never been a big Antonio Bryant guy. I know he was in Cleveland. I used to cover him in Cleveland, and he had a 1,000-yard season. But, you know, I don't necessarily know if he's a great fit for them in terms of taking the pressure off Chad Ochocinco So I think Tell Owens, you know, considering, you know, aside from the personality aspect of it, I really think that kind of pairing could work on the field, at least for the short term, at least for 1 year.
I wish I was optimistic, man. That seems like a volatile mix to me. I mean, that's like gasoline in a match. You know, who's going to be the number one? What if some guy doesn't see enough balls? The pass protection was sort of suspect last year to begin with. I understand your points with Mike Brown, too, but to me, I would much rather have Brandon Marshall minus that 21st pick than Antonio or Terrell. But I see your point.
What about $40 million? You'd rather pay him $40 million as well?
Well, that's fine. I'm not writing the check.
Oh, yeah, you don't write the check. You just care about the talent. Yeah,
I'm just talking about winning, man. Yeah, I think Brandon Marshall is much better than these guys, but I can see your point. I mean, but once again, all these guys have questions around them. I mean, it's a typical Bengals type of move.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, the contract is the other end of it that you got to consider with Brandon Marshall. I mean, you're giving up the first-round pick, which is something the Bengals usually don't do, but at the same time, I mean, I just can't see. I can't remember a time when the Bengals went after a guy in free agency and paid them, you know, $40 million. They barely wanted to pay their number six overall pick, Andre Smith, the big contract. You had that, you know, that big thing, that big, you know, contract holdout over the summer. So the Bengals just don't give out huge contracts for guys, you know, outside the organization. They pay Carson Palmer, you know, they pay Chad Ochocinco. They do tend to keep their own on occasions, but I just can't see them making a trade for Brandon Marshall and then paying him that huge deal, especially when they can get a guy like Terrell Owens for a year or two to sort of patch that hole up and see if they can make a run, or even Antonio Bryant, where they might have to sign him to a, you know, maybe a three-year deal, you know, something a little shorter. I just don't really see them making that type of monetary commitment to a guy like Brandon Marshall. But it should be interesting either way. I do see them getting a receiver, a veteran receiver at some point. It's just a matter of who.
You mentioned Carson Palmer, and I'm curious if you're hearing anything from your sources. Do they have any questions about him now? I mean, it's easy to dismiss that the passing game wasn't his fault. You know, there was a lot of things at play there in a negative way against him. But I'm starting to think, too, that maybe he isn't the guy. Do you get any of that feeling from the organization?
Yeah, last I checked on Palmer, I checked on him at the NFL Combine. I talked to somebody, you know, about the situation, someone in the know, and you know, they mentioned the thumb injury, not necessarily affecting his throwing, but more so affecting his ball handling, you know, his handoff,
sure.
You know, just gripping the ball
play
in the
action.
Pocket, you know, yeah, play action, things like that. Not to use that as an excuse, I do think, you know, he had a pretty average season for his standards, particularly late in the year, but I don't really get the sense internally from the Bengals that there's all that much concern. I think the Bengals, more than anybody, especially more than, you know, people from the outside, realize how, you know, how bad their offensive line was in pass protection, how bad the number two receiver was, you know, with Lavernius Coles, and they cut him. So I think that sort of shows, you know, what the Bengals thought, you know, of Lavernius Coles and his performance last year. The fact that they never really had a pass-catching tight end since Carson Palmer has been there. So I think that they realize a lot of the offensive limitations, probably more than what, you know, what we see from the outside. We just kind of see Carson Palmer, you know, missing receivers or passes going high or you know, things like that. But I think they sort of feel that, you know, Palmer's still a very good player and a very good quarterback. He just needs the weapons around him. But, you know, if they do, let's say they do get a Terrell Owens or an Antonio Bryant, they draft a tight end and sort of have those weapons, then really it's no excuse at that point. But, you know, is Carson Palmer still the Carson Palmer of 2005 or 2006 or 2007 when he's throwing for 4,000 yards? I'd say probably not, but I still think he's a very good player at that position. And, you know, I don't really think that's as big a concern as, you know, some of these other teams like the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns, you know, teams
sure.
who desperately need quarterbacks.
And let's talk a smidge here about the Ravens and a couple of free agency things I wanted to throw out there is, to me, they set themselves up that I think they should be worried. I mean, Troy Smith was a fifth-round tender. Jared Gaither was a first-round tender. I think there should be a lot of teams looking at those two. I mean, you mentioned the Bills, the Rams. Some of these quarterback-starved teams, hey, if Big Ben's in trouble, bring Troy Smith to Pittsburgh or, you know, bring him to be Seneca Wallace's short-term backup. For a fifth-round pick, that seems like it's stealing to me. And then Jared Gaither, if you're one of those teams at the end of the first round, the Colts come to mind, Arizona comes to mind, you know, you're in win-now mode, I'll take a franchise left tackle for a late first-round pick. To me, it seems like Baltimore may have made mistakes on these guys. And then my last question with them is, do you think there's any chance that they bring back Mason now that Bolden's in the fold? You know, to me, he's real similar. He's a possession guy. he's just sort of a lesser version of Bolden. You know, they need a deep threat to me.
Yeah, for as far as the Mason thing first, you know, it looks like he's less of a priority at this point, you know, with Bolden. I think he could still fit in the offense as a number two guy, a possession guy. They're just probably going to have to get either a tight end that could really stretch the field or you know, a deep threat, you know, in the draft. But and also, yeah, I
maybe Dante Stallworth's that guy.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him in 2 years, so you got to. Right. I mean, they've been impressed with his workouts. They got to see. But as far as the Jerry Gates thing, they do have an interesting dilemma there. If a team does offer him, you know, an extension and you know that first round pick, do the Ravens take it? You know, they have the option of moving Michael Orr to left tackle. There's already been conversations about that, even last season, whether he's capable of playing left tackle. I think that Michael Orr is. You know, or do they match the offer and keep Gates? I think that's going to be one of the more interesting decisions that they're going to have. And I really think he's probably the only guy on that team that, you know, with the first-round tender that's going to get that type of interest because, like you said, he's a left tackle, a starting left tackle that could play in this league. Troy Smith, I would be surprised if Troy Smith returns to the Ravens next year. A fifth-round tender is pretty low for him. He's a very good backup quarterback. I don't know necessarily he's sort of on that line of whether he can be a starter, but I'm sure there's going to be plenty of teams. I mean, think about the Oakland Raiders. I mean, Hugh Jackson is over there now as the offensive coordinator. He was Troy Smith's quarterback coach in Baltimore. They could definitely be a possibility in terms of just giving up a fifth-round tender.
And, he might be their best guy today. He might be their starter.
Yeah, exactly. And Hugh Jackson, he knows, you know, Troy Smith knows Hugh Jackson's system. He can come over to Oakland and definitely compete, if not win the job. So I think they're definitely a target. You could take Cleveland Browns off the board. I never really thought the Browns were really that interested because they're going to sort of West Coast principles. And, you know, they got a guy that's familiar with that system in Seneca Wallace. You could take the Browns off the board. But, you know, teams like Buffalo, you know, teams like Oakland, I think could really come into play for Troy Smith. So it'll be interesting. Like I said, I'd be really surprised if a team doesn't take a chance on Troy Smith with just a fifth-round tender.
And I don't mean to keep you too much longer, but let's just touch on the Browns real quick. And you brought up Seneca Wallace. What do you see his role as? And let's talk about the quarterback situation in Cleveland overall. What's your hunches there?
Yeah, well, philosophically, I think the Seneca Wallace addition pretty much confirms that, you know, if the Browns don't completely go to a West Coast offense, that they're going to have at least heavy West Coast principles. The Browns have been sort of hesitant to say at this point. They've been talking philosophy a lot within that building. And every time, you know, they're asked, you know, are you running a West Coast offense? They're saying, well, we're still talking about that. We're having, you know, we're meeting, talking philosophy and things like that. But I think the Seneca Wallace addition pretty much confirms that the team is going to go either heavy, you know, heavy on West Coast offense, if not go to a pure West Coast offense next season. Now, there's already some early talk that he could be a starter. I'm not sold on that. I mean, he's been a career backup. He's played okay when given the opportunity. But I don't know if, you know, starting Seneca Wallace for a 16-game season in the AFC North against defenses, top five defenses, as a matter of fact, in Pittsburgh, in Baltimore, and in Cincinnati, all those three teams were top five defenses. I'm not really sold on that idea. So I don't think the Browns are done at quarterback. I think they're still going to be blowing up the phone lines, seeing if they can get, from what I've heard, if they had their druthers, Kevin Cobb would be the guy. Tom Heckert really likes him. He had a hand in drafting him in Philadelphia. But, you know, I think the price tag might be a little bit too high where that could be a stalemate. But I don't think they're done at quarterback. Derek Anderson has a $2 million bonus to where he's probably going to be released in the next week or so. And, you know, so then you have, you know, Seneca Wallace and Brady Quinn. I'd be surprised if that's all that they'll try to do. That might be all that they can do, but I really think they'll try to get more stability there at quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, everywhere Holmgren's gone, he's brought in a guy immediately, Favre, Hasselbeck, usually with some familiarity there. You know, this move makes a lot of sense with Wallace, but I think the other shoe's going to drop. Do you think they can get much for Quinn, though?
No, I don't think the trade value there is that high. They actually had some value with Quinn last offseason, but they wanted to see if he could be the starter, so they didn't move him. And then, you know, he comes out, he starts, you know, he pretty much flames out, doesn't have a very good season, and now that trade value just isn't as high as it used to be. But, you know, as you saw with the Corey Williams deal, you know, the Browns are willing to make some trades to alter their roster, and, you know, they aren't really asking anything that's unreasonable. So, you know, so I think there could be some interest in Quinn out there as long as the price is reasonable, but, you know, I wouldn't get the expectations up too high for Browns fans in terms of getting, you know, a high draft pick, which, you know, they might have been able to get last year, but probably won't be able to get for him this year.
All right, man. Very good. And I really appreciate you coming on. You were a wealth of knowledge as always, bud. And keep in touch. Give me a buzz this week, and we'll talk some blogging stuff.
Hey, no problem, Matt. Always fun talking football with you.
Absolutely, bud. Well, I want to welcome Kevin Seifert, ESPN.com, NFC North blogger. And how's things going, buddy? Everything going all right?
Yeah, pretty good. Been busy the past few days.
Huh? I bet. Your Bears are the talk of the town. What do you think, man?
Yeah, they. I mean, if you even thought a year ago, say who would be the team that would jump out and spend more money than any other NFL team? I don't think Chicago would have been at the top of the list. They've really changed their style and changed their philosophy, and really, it's kind of a no lose situation for the guys that they have there: Jerry Angelo, the general manager; Lovie Smith, the coach. You know, these guys that they signed are either going to benefit them and make them better next year, or they're going to be somebody else's problem. I think it's pretty clear that they're in a win-now situation, and they don't have to worry too much about the long term.
Yeah, that was really my first question. Is this a desperate organization? I mean, I think everybody out there knows they don't have a second-round pick. They don't have a first-round pick.
Right.
They have a lot of needs. So if you're going to fill them, you really only have one way of doing so. Obviously, they have the owner's permission to open up the wallet. Is it a desperate organization?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and they really, you know, I give them credit for acknowledging that there's really one avenue here for them to get better. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that a team without a lot of high draft picks also decided not to spend a lot of money on free agency. But they, you know, there were a handful of really good players out there available to all NFL teams, and the Bears stepped up and signed two of them in Chester Taylor and Julius Peppers. And in terms of defensive end and running backs, that might have been the top guy at each position in free agency. And so they certainly took advantage of the only avenue and the only opportunity they had. They didn't really have any choice, you know, but we've certainly seen examples of teams turn their back on free agency even in that situation. So I think they do deserve some credit for being willing to step up and extract the cash from the owners of the Bears.
Yeah, you mentioned Chester Taylor, and I thought that was a great move. I thought he fit the Mart system really well. I don't think most fans out there realize what an asset he is as a pass protector, you know, ability to catch the football. I'm curious, though, what is your thoughts on Matt Forte? Is that an indictment on him? And also, do you think it had a little bit of influence, too, to, you know, steal a guy from a division rival?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that they hurt the Vikings to an extent by signing Chester Taylor. But yeah, ultimately, I think Taylor will have a bigger impact with the Bears than he would have had with the Vikings anyway. And part of that is because, while I think Matt Forte is not in danger of losing a starting job, he certainly, over the past couple years, could have used some help. You know, I think he was the only guy they really revolved around and relied on. And you know, whether it was injury to Kevin Jones or the Garrett Wolfe injury, there really hasn't been anybody to at least be a change of pack, pace back for the Bears. And I think that helps the starter sometimes, too, when defenses have to adjust to a different speed guy every now and then you bring back the starter and Forte, and he's more effective. So I think Chester Taylor can help Matt Forte be more effective. I covered Taylor in 2006 with the Vikings, and that was really the only year that he was a full-time 20 to 25 carry guy, and he broke down after 12 games. I think what he is ideally is a guy who can be a 8 to 10 carry a game guy and be a third down back and be used in the slot or even split out wide on occasion and be totally reliable and blitz pickup and that sort of thing. So I don't think that you bring in Chester Taylor to challenge Forte for the starting job, but what you do bring him in to be a weapon all over the field that can help Forte be more effective when he is in the game.
Yeah, you know, I think what you said best there, too, was that Taylor's going to help Forte. And I don't know that people realize, too, is this is a guy that had a lot of carries at Tulane, came into the league last year as a rookie, and had a ton of touches as a rookie. And in reality, if you look at the 32 teams in the league, how many teams relied on one running back as much as the Bears did Forte last year? And I don't think it's a service to him.
No, both years. I mean, you look at his rookie year, I think he led the NFL in percentage of yards from scrimmage by any one player on a team. And so he was, 2 years ago as a rookie, he was the central focus of their offense. And this was a guy as a second-round pick, you know, a good running back, but not a guy that necessarily came into the league expecting to be a 350 carry a season guy. And so he sort of stepped into that role because they really didn't have anybody else and didn't do a great job of creating extra options. So I think I think, if anything else, this will let Matt Forte be the type of player he was sort of destined and probably slotted to be, which is, you know, it's okay to be a starter, but maybe not be the only running back that a team is relying on.
Sure. And not to be outdone, your Lions stepped up and made some moves here, too.
Yeah.
A little bit quieter, but maybe just as effective.
Yeah, I mean, they have the number two pick in the draft, so they have some other options, but they have lots of more holes in the Bears than pretty much any other NFL team outside of the Rams, probably. And I think Jim Schwartz, the coach, has been pretty honest about that, saying the Lions' biggest need is talent. You know, they need talent across the board, really. Probably quarterback was the only, you know, position where they really could sort of sit pat this year. And so they identified some players, and they went after them hard. Jim Schwartz was on Kyle Vandenbosch's doorstep at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, the first minute of free agency. Nate Burleson out in Seattle, his phone rings at 12:01 Eastern time, first minute of free agency. And it's Scott Linehan. He's in town. Would you like to come eat dinner? Linehan is the Lions offensive coordinator. And so they recruited and went after free agents like this was a college situation, and that's probably what the Lions have to do. I mean, they don't probably have the greatest reputation around the league as a place where free agents would come to prosper, but they went out and they really, you know, beat the pavement and recruited some guys and Vandenbosch and Nate Burleson, who, you know, maybe aren't going to be all pro players this year, but they're without a doubt better than the guys the Lions had in those roles last year. And that's all the Lions can do right now, is try to replace the players they have with players who are better and just keep that process going until they get their roster to really an NFL standard level, which it's on its way, but it's not there yet. And so I think that was their primary goal this year in free agency, just get better.
Let me know if you think I'm on track here. And those two signings in particular were, you know, Vandenbosch is somebody that Schwartz is extremely confident with as a human being, knows who he is. He's very familiar with him. You know, I've heard some heat that, you know, people are saying, well, by the time the Lions are good, Vandenbosch is going to be done. But the way I see both these signings are, you're surrounding your stud, and your stud's either going to be Matthew Stafford, and it's going to be whoever this defensive tackle is that they bring in with strong supporting players that are going to help them on and off the field. And to me, that's very, very smart.
Yeah, and I heard a good comparison, especially on the Vandenbosch thing. When in Brad Childress's first year in Minnesota, he signed Steve Hutchinson, who's obviously an outstanding player, but also a really mean, gritty, dirty, hardworking type player. And he wanted Hutchinson's attitude to rub off on the rest of his offensive line and make them a little meaner and a little hungrier and just sort of have them take on his personality. And I think that's happened to an extent. And there's maybe a little bit of that in Kyle Vandenbosch, too. I mean, Vandenbosch sort of embodies the type of hardworking, eager type player that Jim Schwartz considers to be his prototypical type personality. And I think he wants, you know, they're certainly hoping for a lot of sacks from him, don't get me wrong. But I think there's also, there's no doubt hope that he will rub off on some of the other younger players, especially whoever they draft. And that he'll sort of, just by being himself, set an example for the type of approach and the type of player that Schwartz wants the rest of his roster to grow into. And so I don't think they went out and spent $26 million to bring in a mentor or a coach. You know, they want him to get some heat on the quarterback, but there's no doubt that that's also part of that and why he specifically identified Vandenbosch as a guy that he wanted to target on minute one of free agency.
Kevin, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I did want to touch on the Vikes real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one guy I think that might have a bullseye on his chest from restricted free agency, and that's Ray Edwards. Do you see, you know, only a first-round tender for him? If I'm the Saints, I'm knocking on his door, or a couple of those late first-round teams. Do you think they have any worries of losing him?
I think that they'd be interested to see what he gets, but they, you know, don't forget they'll always have a chance to match whatever he might seek in free agency. I think that first round, it only being a first round, certainly invites that type of situation, a team at the bottom of the first round looking for a guy who came out early out of college. So I believe he's 25, 26 years old. He had 8.5 sacks last year in the regular season. He's been a starter for most of the past 3 years and had 4 sacks in the playoffs. So in 18 games he had last year, he had almost 13 sacks. And so that is certainly some numbers that are eye-opening. We all know how precious a commodity outside pass rush is in the NFL, and so it wouldn't be beyond the realm of somebody to take a look-see with him. But I would have to think the Vikings would sort of use that as a tool to establish his market value and just go ahead and match at that point.
Sure. I don't know if they could afford to let him go right now.
Right. No, it's, I mean, certainly, you know, you look at their defensive line. Jared Allen's got a long way to go in his career and is at the top. But Pat Williams is probably nearing the end of his career, and they really need to make sure they keep the and continue to establish their defensive line as the strength of their defense.
Sure. Well, hey, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anytime. Next on tap, we got John Clayton, ESPN.com's NFL senior writer. John, great to talk to you again, buddy. How's things going?
Doing good, doing good. Free agency, we're almost into the second wave. We got the tsunami going on Tuesday with Terrell Owens and Antonio Brown in Cincinnati at the same time. Put your egos in check.
Yeah, I was with AB and Pitt and Cleveland, and certainly some volatile action there. And you know what, we just talked to James Walker about it, but do you have a hunch in which direction since he's going to go?
I think they would lean toward Antonio Bryant because I think that, number one, he's a lot younger. He's only like about 28 years old. And then secondly, I think that they realize that if you bring in T.O., it could be a destructive force. And I think that there's certainly people in that building that are against the idea. I think more are on board to bring in A.B. So it looks like A.B. trumps T.O. in C.B.
Easy enough. Personally, I think Bryant's just the better player. But, you know, assuming, let's say he does end up in Cincy, do you see there being much interest floating around the league with Owens now?
I think it's going to be a little bit harder because now two teams that are seriously interested in him would be off the mix if Cincy does end up signing Antonio Bryant. See, I think when you look at T.O., he's their third option. Option number one is Bryant. You know, he doesn't come with any draft choice penalties. You can just sign him, put him in there. That works out. The second option would be exploring the Brandon Marshall, but in the end they'd probably have to give up a first-round pick. You know, they wouldn't sign him to a tender. They would probably more than likely try to work out a trade. And then it comes down to T.O., but I still think that it's split in the building whether to go to T.O., but clearly they have to do something to upgrade their receiving core. As you know, you watched pretty much every game last year. They had no separation of wide receiver. Lavernius Coles really did not have any impact on that offense at all, and Ocho Cinco needs somebody to help him, you know, at least take some coverage away from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Their passing game was really a nightmare last year, and I think Bryant is the better option. The thing is, if in Owens, it could almost be like a year ago where you could see him floating around for a while out there, and that would worry me if I was his agent. If he doesn't land this one, I'm not sure who the next best fit is. But
well, you know, the stats work against him. If you look back in the last three decades, there's only been six examples of a 37-year-old, and he'll turn 37 later in the season, wide receiver who's had a 1,000-yard year. Three of those times were involving Jerry Rice. Well, I mean, you know, maybe T.O. is going to be the Hall of Famer, but he's not Jerry Rice. Rice, obviously, one of the greatest players, not only receivers of all time. So you would think when you put all those things together, you know, you can sign him with expectations that he's not going to get 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the other issue, the other guy you brought up was Brandon Marshall. And, you know, it seems to me, the writing on the wall to me was, hey, if you want Brandon Marshall for a first-round pick, you can have him. That seems cheap to me. I think there would be a lot of teams really interested in that. And since he would have been one, Baltimore, Miami, I think there's plenty of wide receiver starved teams out there. Do you see him moving?
I see him moving, but I think right now it's going to be a more of a limited audience just because of the fact that you have to, one, sign him for $9.5 or $10 million a year, which, of course, with his past, I mean, one bad move he makes off the field could cause a one-year suspension. That's worry number one, and that's what discounts his value because when you look at anybody that has a 100-catch history like he has, three consecutive years at 100 catches, the value is a first and a three. But because of the circumstances, I don't see as many teams in there to get that bidding up where it's going to be a first and a third. That's the problem that they face because, you know, Baltimore is out right now. Detroit is out right now. They've made receiver moves. The only teams I could see coming in there, you can see Cincinnati. Seattle obviously has the lead right now because they had him in for a visit. And then the other two teams could be Miami or New England, but I don't necessarily see them bidding in a first-round pay. So I think in the end, this is going to be tough for Denver to recognize that they're going to have to sell him at a discount or they may just have to elect to keep him.
Well, you mentioned New England, and it's just too tempting for me. I got to bring Pod Vader in on this one. I don't know if you listened to our podcast last week, but he has a scenario where he wants that first-round pick for his Pats to be Brandon Marshall, and he wants one of their seconds. As you know, they have 3 seconds to be Leon Washington. And I can't. I have a hard time punching holes in that theory.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be nice, but I can't see the Jets.
I'm not writing the checks either.
Yeah, I mean, Jets aren't going to give up Leon Washington for a second-round pick. I mean, particularly
but that's
now
what he's tendered at. I mean, the Patriots could offer him a contract that the Jets would not necessarily match.
Mm-hmm. At least
true.
Force them
true.
To match it.
But also, too, I mean, you know, listen, this is a team right now that can't get into free agency. I mean, they had to make a trade to get Antonio Cromartie, and so, you know, they've got a big fort up there right now because with the inability, because, again, if they even lose him, they can't replace him in free agency because he's a restricted free agent. So I just have to think that Mike Tannenbaum is not going to let Washington go, and even if it's a painful contract, he'll have to accept it because, you know, remember, there's no cap. It's not like a cap consequences. It's just cash. And so I think you can come and try to get that, get him for a second-round pick, but I just think in the end they'll match the offer.
I can just see Belichick trying to put the screws to a heated division rival, though, and maybe sneaking a guy out with 3 second-round picks in his pocket.
It could be, but, you know, that's one where, you know, let's put it this way. It would cost so much for them to do it, and, you know, he would then probably end up being, what, the third highest paid player on their offense. You know, he'd be paid more than Wes Welker. You know, he wouldn't be paid as much as, say, Randy Moss or Tom Brady, but, you know, what you have to worry about, too, is how that affects the locker room internally. I mean, I still think that there's a little bitterness when they went out and signed Adelius Thomas because, you know, there was guys on that team like Asante Samuel, Richard Seymour, guys like that that left that, you know, Seymour did get one contract, but when he came out of the next one, they let him go in a trade. I just think that that would cause too much friction. It's one of those things where, you know, Vader may have a good idea. I just don't see it happening in practicality.
Sure. Well, that's logical. And one question for you, too, about Aaron Kampman. I love the signing in Jacksonville. It's obviously a massive need. What are you hearing concerning his health? Is he going to be ready? That worries you, but just how banged up is he still?
Well, that's the worry because, you know, he only had the surgery on December the 4th, and, you know, he is a little bit older right now. Now, you would anticipate he's going to be there for the season, but where's his explosion going to be? Because you are talking an ACL. I mean, clearly he's not going to be ready for the off-season program. I mean, and he's going to be, at the very most, probably not doing anything in the first 2 or 3 weeks of training camp. So, in a lot of ways, he's playing catch-up right now. That's where I think the big surprise was. He ended up getting a 4-year deal at $26 million with a $11 million in guarantees. You know, that, under the circumstance, is fair because that's what Kyle VandenBosch was able to get. But also, in a lot of ways, it just it surprised everybody because it seemed like that's what the Jaguars were trying to get away from, you know, trying to take gambles in free agency because that's what got them in trouble the last couple of years. So this is a gamble. I mean, they get a great character, a great hustle guy, all those different things, but you still have to wonder if there's any setback, then all of a sudden it goes into the regular season.
Yeah, that's the worry. I mean, I'm not a doctor. But just watching the players, I would much rather have Kampman if I were the Jaguars and VandenBosch. But if it takes that long, boy, that puts a lot more concern in my mind. So let's go to the Eagles real quick while I have them on the phone. And what's the story here with the whole quarterback situation? You got any inside scoop? Who's staying? Who's going? You know, Vic's agent said they're going to pick up the 1.5. Where are we at with that?
I mean, it's kind of like being at Macy's and you have two of the guys kind of, you know, continuing to walk around the window trying to be sold. And even though they're not doing the walking, the team's doing the walking for them. And I don't know if they're going to be able to get a sell. I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, they are shopping or were willing to take deals for Michael Vick and they're willing to pay $2.5 million to try to get draft choice compensation. You know, they picked up the $1.5 million roster bonus and that will give him a $1 million additional guarantee. So that's a $2.5 million commitment. You know, certainly you know that McNabb's in the last year of his contract, and if they can get trade value for him, they trade him. So what they're trying to do is say, okay, is Brett Favre coming back? Which right now I think he is, and that kills any kind of Minnesota deal. You know, maybe Tom Heckert, now that he's over in Cleveland, might want to try to do something with McNabb. You know, they already picked up Seneca Wallace and they're trying to put the West Coast offenses. You know, they're hoping maybe that Tom can try to bail them out and make a trade there. But in the end, if there's no trade, they're not obviously going to release any of those three guys. And if they're not going to release them and there's no trade, it's pretty evident they have a three-headed monster at quarterback led by Donovan McNabb.
Okay, give me a quick yay-nay on these two scenarios then. Donovan McNabb to the Rams for the 33rd pick in the draft, that first pick in the second round.
Nay.
Nay?
nay. And here's the reason nay, because, I mean, it's now pretty evident where the Rams are going, because if you had any question based on what the price of a defensive tackle is at the first pick, which is going to be $12 to $12.5 million a year, and they have them having no quarterback, now you see free agency started, and two moves now spell it out. First, they get A.J. Feely, who knows Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator from their Philadelphia days, to be the bridge quarterback. So he's going to be, A.J. Feely is the bridge quarterback. Now, they made a move on Monday where they picked up Fred Robbins, the defensive tackle. All right, so now, teams don't spend, I mean, again, teams don't spend and then all of a sudden change their mind if they have other ways to go. So now they got Fred Robbins, they got Clifford Ryan at defensive tackle, they have Adam Carricker coming back after surgery, and they have another draft choice that they had last year. They have their four tackle rotation. So to take Sue or to take McCoy, certainly it'd almost be redundant at this stage if they don't have a quarterback. So as long as Sam Bradford now comes in as healthy, can throw the football, he'll be the number one pick, and that would kill any kind of an idea of them giving value up in a trade to get a veteran quarterback in the last year of his contract.
Next scenario, Browns give up that early first-round pick for Cobb and maybe some change.
I think that's one that I think would be under solid consideration by the Browns, but not necessarily the Eagles, because, you know, you notice when we were talking about the Eagle scenario, you know, the two guys that they're going to be shopping at the window are going to be McNabb and are going to be Vic.
Sure.
In the end, they want Cobb to be the long-term quarterback, and you know, that's why they're positioning everything. And so unless it's a ridiculously high price that they can get for Cobb, I don't see that happening. I can see it happening more from the Browns standpoint, because you can see they pick up Seneca Wallace. He is now the backup quarterback in Cleveland. They're going to let Derek Anderson go by March 20th because he has a $2 million roster bonus, and now it's a decision. Do you stay with Brady Quinn? Do you trade Brady Quinn? Do you make a move? I could see the Browns making that move. I can't see the Eagles making that move, because I think it's pretty clear they want Cobb as the quarterback of the future, and they're willing to at least do things with other guys to make him the quarterback of the present.
Now, that all makes an awful lot of sense, and you could also look at it if you're the Browns and say, hey, let's go with Brady Quinn. Let's go with Seneca Wallace for a year. We're still not a great team. Maybe we get Jake Locker next year or live to fight another day at that position.
Yeah, I think that's the case, too, because let's put it this way. I mean, Eric Mangini has a lot of pressure on him to win this year, because a lot of people didn't even think he was going to be back. But Mike Holmgren believes in him, has given him the chance to come back. And, hey, listen, who knows? I mean, Mike Holmgren could end up be coaching this team next year if the team fails. Mike Holmgren's going to do everything possible to get this team to win as fast as possible. But also, too, they have such a long way to go, particularly on offense. And you can see that there's two coaches in the front office on Mike Holmgren's staff that are there to help the transition to the West Coast offense. Gil Haskell's there, Keith Gilbertson's there. So you can kind of see that, you know, this is not just a one-year process, but at the end of the 2 years or so, or before that, you may actually see Mike Holmgren in there too, but that's for a future time right now. Clearly, you know, they're reviewing the quarterback situation, and a move on Monday with Seneca Wallace tells you there's going to be change more than just staying the status quo.
John, you're the best. I appreciate it so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Football Today at ESPNRadio.com. That's our email address. If you've got more questions, free agent questions, whatever, Matt's here to answer them. I'm here to ask them. Matt, good job today with the three guests.
Hey, thanks. It was sort of new to me. I'm not used to being the interviewer and wanted to chime in like I was the one getting the questions asked to me, but showed a little patience.
Couple things that we didn't get to ask that I want to ask you. First, I want to talk about the Jets and the things that they've done in their secondary. Traded Kerry Rhodes to the Cardinals for two draft picks, acquired Antonio Cromartie, and also released Lito Shepard. What do you think about the Jets secondary with these moves?
Well, I do think it's better, and I do think they need to find a complement now for Jim Leonard. I think we all know that Jim Leonard is Rex Ryan's guy. You know, he's not your typical strong safety, in that he's a very small individual for the position. And, you know, he isn't the ideal free safety either. He isn't a tremendous range player, but he makes a ton of plays. He's a quarterback back there. And I don't know if they ever felt that Rhodes was the proper complement for him. So I do think they opened up a need for themselves and that they have to find a starting caliber safety. But it's a strong safety draft, and they probably go that route early in the draft. I don't think Shepard's going to be missed. I think he's a much better, bigger name than he is production player.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cromartie move, originally I was a little down on it because I didn't trust him. He doesn't play the run. He doesn't like tackle. He's got off-field concerns. But But the more and more I think of it, I really like it. And I think it could make an excellent defense superb. And we all know that Revis is going to do battle with the number one. They like to play a lot of man. They're going to attack the quarterback. They're going to allow Cromartie to be really aggressive because he'll often have safety support over the top. And that's where he thrives. You know, if they can generate big plays by him getting the ball in his hands and attacking the football in the air and playing to his strengths, which Rex Ryan does extremely well with all his defensive personnel, I think it can be a major get for them.
Let's stay in the AFC East and talk about the Dolphins. They jumped on Carlos Dansby real early, and then they've just re-signed Chad Pennington to a one-year, $2.5 million deal, and reports are saying that he may only be the third quarterback on the depth chart. What do you think about what the Dolphins have done so far?
Yeah, I'm surprised Pennington actually took that. I'm sure he's very comfortable there. It's a great place to live, all those things. But I would think he would be more interested to go to another team that might give him a chance to get involved. Maybe there was much less interest than I thought. But the initial thought is, well, what do you do with Tyler Thigpen? What do you do with Pat White? You got to think Pat White's coming back. Tyler Thigpen might yield you a decent draft pick to a team like Buffalo, where Chan Gailey was successful with him. So if it frees up an asset and gets you another draft pick by moving him, I'm all for it. It makes sense for Miami. I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense for Pennington. Dansby is a massive need for them. And if you look at that defense, Jason Ferguson just got suspended. He's missing the first eight games at nose. Mm-hmm. They're questionable at that position without him and even with him. But if you look up the middle of their defense, nose tackle, two inside linebackers, two safeties, they're remarkably slow last year. You know, they had two strong safeties playing free. Jabril Wilson has now been released, too, to hopefully alleviate that problem. But once again, opens up a big free safety need. Their linebackers last year were slow plotter-type guys that didn't make a lot of plays. And Dansby's the opposite. And I think he's really going to bring value on third down against the pass, give them a lot of options as a blitzer, opens up a lot more possibilities for them, particularly on throwing downs. But in the end, it just makes them a lot more athletic, a lot faster up the middle, which was a huge problem.
A couple of things that I'm watching for, and you can chime in with some other ideas and thoughts, but the Chiefs are hosting, apparently, Justin Fargus and Thomas Jones, so they're apparently looking to upgrade at running back, despite the season Jamaal Charles had last year. And the Cardinals are bringing in a bunch of people, Joey Porter, Nick Eason, Wade Smith, and Larry Foote, all due for visits with the Cardinals.
Well, the Cardinals, like anybody that used to wear black and gold, I mean, all three of those four guys are former Steelers that Wisenhunt and Grimm and that group are familiar with, and so that makes some sense. You know, my thoughts in Arizona, though, are almost across the board. They're losing really good players, and they're going to replace them with mediocre to slightly above average players, and nowhere is that going to be more prominent than the quarterback position. None of those names have me real excited of people to bring in. I think Larry Foote's a good player. I think you could get some production out of Porter if used properly. There's some leadership issues there with those guys, too, to come in and establish things. But in the end, you know, I think you're going backwards at a lot of key positions in Arizona this offseason. And who's the other ones you asked me about real quick?
The Chiefs bringing in Justin Fargus and Thomas Jones for visits.
That I agree with. I think if you're KC, you realize you have a real asset here in Jamaal Charles, and you don't want to beat him into the ground. I don't want him getting 300 carries, 350 carries in a 16-game season when you go 2-14. They're a long way away. It's a bad offensive line. I think you need a banger in there to make him, make his career last a little longer, let him be used properly. As good as he was, his best games came against not-so-great defenses, and I'm not entirely sold, but I do think you have to say, this is our guy. Let's let him last for the long term, and let's not kill him before we're, you know, before we have a chance of getting good. I don't understand Justin Fargus. I would much rather have Thomas Jones. Fargus, to me, is I'd rather use a fifth-round pick on just about anybody than Justin Fargus.
The only thing of note is that John Clayton brought it up. We went through the first wave tsunami of free agency. We're starting to get into that second wave. And you and I are both on this bandwagon that there's a lot of quality on that restricted free agent side that John Clayton seems to think that most teams in an uncapped year are going to match these offers that teams are going to get.
Yeah, and he has a better pulse of what every organization is going to do than you and I do at this point. But I do think that there are some guys out there who are very attractive considering their tenders. And, of course, that team has to allow them to go. And I'm not sure that everybody out there understands that. Is if somebody comes in and makes your restricted free agent an offer, that team has to, you have to say, okay, I am not going to match that. But, you know, I think that there's some teams out there that are bigger spenders than others, and this could be a year that you say, you know, Gaither to me looks like a Colts, and there's a lot of guys out there. That, you know, Sims from Seattle for a fifth-round pick, or Troy Smith, we mentioned, for a fifth-round pick, and I think there are some attractive guys out there, and there's a lot of teams in a win-now mode. As we know, there's a lot of coaches and front-office people who get let go every year, and the free agency market isn't that strong. It wasn't that strong when it opened. It's less strong now. If you need somebody, maybe you give a pick up. Although, it is a very good draft, too. You know, a lot of the juniors came out. Draft picks are more valuable than ever.
So we'll have to see, wait and see how things go. We'll be back again next Thursday. We came to you a little bit early this week due to scheduling, but we'll be back again next Thursday. I'll be here. Matt Williamson will most likely be here, and we'll be talking more free agency.
Sounds like a plan, brother.
There you have it.
The music provided on today's show is from Mevio's Music Alley, Will Chryski's Metal Mayhem. Check it out at music.mevio.com. For more football talk, be sure to check out Football Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.